Let's welcome in our friend. This is Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, of course, a retired law enforcement individual herself, 29-year veteran of a large city police department in the Chicago suburbs, as well as somebody who has worked on the private sector side, on the public sector side. And now, of course, Betsy is with our National Police Association. And you see her all over all the I see you everywhere now, Betsy. I see Betsy everywhere. I see you on Newsmax, on national shows. And so we thank you for carving out the time for us as well.
Of course. Yeah, it's been such a busy, busy time. So this is so frustrating, you know, that Robert Card is still on the run. And in addition to, you know, we're really focused, of course, on what's happening in Maine. But like you said, all around the country, we continue to see horrible crime after horrible crime. And that's one of the things that, people on Twitter, on X, formerly known as Twitter, were all talking about yesterday is, you know, when situations like this happen, like the shooting in Maine, the president jumps up and puts the flags at half staff and all of that and talks about gun violence. He never actually talks about Chicago or Philadelphia or St. Louis or New Orleans and all of the gun violence there. And I think people are starting to really notice that certain, you know, politicians only want to get involved when it benefits them politically. And that shouldn't be. This should not be political.
Yeah, I think that's well said, that, you know, it just feels like following a narrative and pandering for an upcoming election or fundraising. And I think people, to your point, Betsy, have gotten savvy to that. It does bring up the issue of, well, first of all, mental health. And actually, you know, there was somebody who had called in and said, you know, these yellow flag laws or the red flag laws, part of the issue with mental health issues in the greater population, especially post-pandemic, but also in law enforcement as a result of the defund the police movement and the military, too. And there is this aspect of mental health, the crisis that we're seeing in the nation. And perhaps this is something that we need to have the conversation about and prepare for.
Well, it absolutely does. I mean, we talk about mental health from a civilian perspective in law enforcement. We also are incredibly concerned with our own mental health. I mean, you know, this is something I've been talking about. The mental health of these law enforcement professionals in Maine right now, especially those from the area, what they are dealing with. You know, 18 bodies, many more shot, multiple crime scenes, no sleep, probably lousy nutrition, and just in the emotional aspect of it. You know, we're going to have to make sure at some point when he is in custody or his body is found that we deal with the emotions of those first responders as well. But when you look at Robert Card, and this is something the National Police Association has been talking about for a while, he should have been in a mental institution or in prison, one or the other. Mm-hmm. And when you look at when he had this meltdown, when they were, you know, training everybody, I think everybody knows the story. They were training at West Point. Mm-hmm. He started to espouse some bizarre things. So what did the military do? They called 911 and law enforcement has to come deal with them. Now, I don't understand that because the military has a huge, huge medical system and they have a mental health system. But he was, taken to a mental health hospital and 2 weeks later he signed himself out. We're going to have to go back to involuntary committals in this country. We're going to have to wrap our heads around that. And I think a lot of people don't remember what that was like in the 70s and 80s when a lot of those facilities were awful.
Yes.
We're going to have to do it properly and not just for situations like this, but of course for the large percentage of people that are homeless and drug addicted are mentally ill.
Yes.
We got to get a handle on this.
Yeah, and I agree with you. We have to revisit, and it was a Supreme Court decision. It was during the Reagan era. We here in the Philadelphia region, certainly, we know all about it because of, you know, what you're talking about with the investigations into mental health facilities. We're kind of famous for that in this region. But I agree with you. We have to revisit this because we have a crisis going on. And so as, I will say this, too. The media, and here in Philadelphia, we see this with the media, Betsy, where they are so quick to talk about the fact of how many law enforcement officers, especially on the Philadelphia Police Force or let's say the greater law enforcement force, oh, they're out on sick leave or they're out on sick duty. And what you're talking about, exactly what you're talking about, there's not really a mechanism or maybe an awareness, even by so-called enlightened members of the, you know, so-called unbiased media, but they don't seem enlightened when it comes to the mental health of law enforcement and or military. I think you're exactly right. This is a huge issue that people need to have the conversation about it and also implement it into healthcare and the union contracts, quite frankly.
Yeah, you are so right, because here's something I don't think most people know. Police officers now die 2.5 times by our own hand than we do by felonious assault. That's just a horrific, horrific statistic, but it's absolutely true. And these leaves that you hear about, you know, and I know have been talked about in Philadelphia and other places, those officers just get so exhausted, both mentally and physically, that they cannot get up and do another shift. And I want people to ponder this. If you have a police officer that is physically exhausted and emotionally and mentally just down in the dumps, down in the ditch, because of all the horrific things that they see shift after shift after shift, including their own colleagues getting shot, injured, and killed in Philadelphia, as in other jurisdictions, do you want them out there with the responsibility to perhaps use deadly force? This has always been one of the frustrations, especially in the last 3 years, is it seems like people want cops to be machines, and then when they're presented with a deadly force situation, that we are supposed to be act flawlessly, you know, 1,000% within policy, within the law, and act. We are not robots, you know. We're not RoboCop, and I hope people are starting to realize that.
Is it also a case where you think about him as far as specifically this suspect, and here's somebody, he's 40, by all accounts, somebody who really was, you know, celebrated as an expert, you know, military, you know, had that, you know, let's say hero mindset where he wants to be in law enforcement, he wants to protect and serve, and now something goes terribly wrong. And so does this bring forth the issue of screening individuals in these high pressure jobs? In other words, without condemning somebody. And I think there's a piece of this where, you know, let's say you have a family member who's in that. And I do. Let's say, so I can relate to that. You don't want to turn somebody in. On the other hand, there's really not a mechanism for somebody who's in law enforcement or who's in military service where they could get some services, much needed services, to deal with their coping mechanisms, let's say.
One of the biggest things that we see in law enforcement, and we've seen this over the last several years, is police officers very often who come forward and sit down with their supervisor or whatever, and they say, look, I'm having some real issues here. I'm feeling depressed. I'm feeling this. I'm feeling that. Very often, one of the first things that happens is they take their gun away, they sit them down on a desk, and then they kind of walk away and go, we'll get you some counseling. So what we have heard time after time after time again from police officers is, I came forward for some help, and all of a sudden I found myself taken off the job, sat in a room like I'm crazy, and treated like there's something wrong with me. So we in law enforcement must, and this goes to leadership, leadership must do a much better job of dealing with the mental health of our officers. There's a lot of talk about it, especially with, you know, a lot of the big, like the, you know, major city chiefs and International Association of Chiefs of Police. It's a lot of talk about police officer mental health, but when it comes to the actual execution, it doesn't always go so well. And a part of that is because people of my generation who are, you know, now in leadership positions, we were told, suck it up, buttercup. Yeah. You know, this is, you know, you decide to become a cop. Yeah. Deal with it. You know, there were no mental health services for law enforcement. There was barely mental health services for citizens when I was a rookie. And we were told, just, you know, go get out there, get it done, shut up, don't take it home, don't talk to anybody about this stuff. You know, that part is changing now, but leadership needs to change along with it. And when you look at somebody like Robert Card, you know, he was a guy that the community appeared to be proud of. His family was proud of. He had this, you know, expertise. He wanted to serve his country. So again, when he, quote unquote, snapped and had to be hospitalized for a couple weeks, I'm going to be very curious to see what the military did for him, what the VA did for him. Yeah. And because, you know, right now, what do we see? The VA doing for soldiers? Well, we'll transition you from man to woman or woman to man 1,000% and pay for it all. Do you think we could maybe deal with the mental health issues of our military personnel, as well as our veterans, and we could go way beyond transing them and maybe help them? Maybe we could have saved 18 people by giving Robert Card some appropriate mental health care. And if that meant him being an institution for a month or 2 months or 3 months or whatever, then so be it. And the other thing is, again, this is a man who was threatening to shoot up a military installation. Yeah. If we've decided that, okay, this is not mental illness, this is just criminal behavior, why isn't he in jail awaiting trial, or why hasn't he been sentenced? And why isn't he in prison? I live close to the Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, one of the biggest Air Force bases in this country. If I got in my truck right now, drove down to Davis-Monthan, and pulled up to the gate and threatened to shoot the place up, you know where I'd be? I'd be in the Pima County Jail. and that's the thing. You can't excuse criminal behavior and say it's a mental health issue and then do nothing about it. It's got to be one or the other, or both sometimes.
Betsy, it's well put. I'm probably going to get ripped for saying this, but part of me, it's a couple things I'll say. Number one, I wonder if we have to look at just with mental health and military and law enforcement. Like here in Philadelphia, our officers, for example, during the Phillies games, et cetera, they were on 12-hour shifts. When we have had a crisis with teenagers being recruited by gangs and the cartel, cops, because we're shorthanded and we have a crisis here with recruitment because of some of the things we're talking about. Number one, I think we will have to re-examine the shifts for law enforcement. I know I'm going to get ripped for saying this, but I just think they're going to have to go to, instead of 12-hour shifts or even 8-hour shifts, they're going to have to make this job look more attractive, not just with the medical plan and everything you're saying. But I think we're going to have to reinvent how we view these law enforcement and even military jobs, you know, that these long tours of duty, et cetera. I think they're going to have to reevaluate it all because we have a recruitment crisis.
Well, we absolutely do. And, you know, I worked those 12-hour shifts and cops love it for the time off because you literally get half, you know, in theory, you get half the days of the year off. The problem is we both end up working so much, we all end up working so much overtime that, and you're incredibly fatigued. Again, when you're doing something, especially, you know, look at Philadelphia, those officers are running call to call to call. They've got, you know, crime, street gangs, all these things. You know, by about 10 hours, you're mentally and physically exhausted, and yet you have to continue to go. Plus, you have overtime details because everybody's trying to make extra money. You got to go to court. When you make arrests, you got to go to court. And I too shall get in trouble, Don, because I loved the 12-hour shifts when I was working them, but I was exhausted, yeah. And I remember that. And tired. In fact, I've written several articles on tired cops, and we know now scientifically that fatigue is equal to being impaired by drugs or alcohol. Mm-hmm. And then I go back to the deadly force issue. Do you want a cop who has been, you know, working 5 days in a row, 12-hour shifts? At the end of that, you know, fifth shift, they get into a deadly force situation and they have to decide whether or not to use deadly force. People are going to have to decide what kind of cops do you want? And leadership is going to have to decide again. Are we going to be able to recruit good quality, not just warm bodies, but good quality police officers to this job? So we're going to have to make some changes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, we always say it takes the other side always talks about it takes a village. And I wonder if they'll have this philosophy with this situation, like you said, with this card guy. In other words, should we blame the village? Should we blame the government? Should we blame those who did not provide the village and all of the resources? They never seem to do that. They want to blame the guns or the Republicans, or it's always a fundraising, you know, bazaar, if you will. Take me through. I want to just ask you and end on a positive note, because the National Police Association, you do so much advocacy, but there's also a positive, you know, piece of this as far as advocating and as far as what you look forward to and what we can be hopeful about. So I wanted to end on that note. If you can just take us with your next project and also, you know, what you're hopeful about.
Well, we are hopeful, honestly, for a lot, because our polling continues to show that most people really love and appreciate law enforcement. One of the things we have right now, and you can see where it is, go to nationalpolice.org. We have a mobile billboard that is traveling the country. And it's so fantastic because people stop the billboard, they take a picture with it, you know, they wave at the driver, and the billboard talks about law enforcement officers as family members, mothers, fathers, and heroes. That were the whole point of it is we're just regular people. We're your next door neighbor. We're the person you sit next to in church, the person you see at the grocery store, but we're also going out there to help keep you safe. And we just want your support. And that is what the National Police Association is all about. We're just trying to bring attention to the anti-police efforts and uplift not just cops, but we're trying to also uplift the citizens who support us. You know, people are starting to bring out those back the blue t-shirts, yes, and pins and signs and flags. And it makes us so incredibly happy. We are truly optimistic.
Well, we'll end on that note for now. Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, thank you so much again for joining us. And I hope you have a blessed Friday. Thank you, Betsy.
Appreciate you, Don. Enjoy the weekend.
Oh, you too. Appreciate you as well. So, Betsy, you can, and like she said, nationalpolice.org, you can see that billboard as well as, you know, and they really do try to have education. They try to, as they call, bridging the blue line, working in communities. It's much like the national version of, let's say, the Police Athletic League, where they're trying to get out the word. And hopefully that helps recruitment as well. And that's what we need. We need in our Philadelphia schools.